joined now by the Premier of the Western Cape, Alan Windy. Premier, it's been a tough day for you with the first deaths from COVID-19, South Africa's first deaths of COVID-19 in your province.
Yes, no, very tough day. I remember vividly on the 11th of March when we actually had this showcase. We wanted to show the media that we were ready for Corona, and we went down to Tygerberg Hospital and we were going to show them the lockdown facilities and the quarantine facilities and how ready we were. And on the way there, I got the message that we'd had our first positive case. And so when I walked into that hospital, the sort of readiness changed to the first case. And I still remember after that saying, are we ready for the first death? And, you know, we were so consumed by lockdown. We had three patients in ICU. We'd already had patients going into ICU and out. We knew we were around about 200 cases, and, you know, you didn't even think it was going to happen. Lockdown was what we were focusing on. And this morning, I was waiting to hear about how things had, the roadblocks had worked and how lockdown was happening. And I got the message of two deaths, not just one. And so, yes, a somber day, a day that really lands what we're doing and why we're doing it. We're doing it to actually mitigate deaths. And we want to, you know, mitigate thousands of deaths. But it really hit home today.
There were a couple of myths that were shattered by this. It's supposed to be only old men who die of COVID-19. And there was a 28-year-old who'd only been admitted yesterday. Was this a surprise to you too?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, that was the biggest surprise, I think. You know, you assumed, and I mean, this is one of the problems, I think, when we assume too much. You assumed that it was going to be either someone who was elderly or someone who was immune compromised. We have a lot of people in our province who are HIV positive, who have TB and have diabetes. And so you assumed it was either going to be someone from the vulnerable groups, and definitely not female, because male is definitely also more vulnerable and less able to deal with this to female. And right in the middle of this, a 28-year-old and a 48-year-old woman, both women. And wow, that actually just added to the power of the punch that that we took this morning.
Were either of them at Tygerberg?
Yes, one's at Tygerberg and one is in the private facility. And yeah, as you say, the she came in last night, and in actual fact, it was one of those things where the doctors have clinically signed it off as COVID, but we actually didn't even have a positive test on the 28-year-old. So we've got a confirmed COVID, 48 years old, and I have 98% certainty of COVID. Year-old women, but that test still to come in. But everybody in the medical field are certain that both of these are COVID cases.
Do you have any others who've been hospitalized in the province?
So, yes, we had three yesterday, and we've got seven today. And hospitalized doesn't always mean that you stay there, but you know, obviously three to seven, and yesterday three, I wasn't even worried about whether anybody was going to be on you know, getting closer to death door, and this shows you how quickly things move. And I mean, yesterday we were sitting under 200, and now we're on 260 cases by 2 p.m. today. So you can also see the spread of the virus is, and the contagion of this virus is so strong and so virulent. It takes your breath away every single day when you see these numbers, and that's why I'm so in support of this lockdown. And we've got to take it seriously, and we've got to measure the 21 days, and it could even go longer than the 21 days, especially if you look at what's happening in other parts of the world.
The lockdown is not working particularly well in parts of Gauteng. How's it going in Western Cape?
No, we also got our problems here, definitely in a number of towns and in another number of parts of the city. People are just carrying on as if there's no change. So at the 10 o'clock meeting I had today, we'd already had 52 roadblocks, 51 arrests, but definitely insufficient. And we've this afternoon again got between military SAPS, our Metro Police, and our traffic police roping them in as well, that we've got to get out there to put a lot more pressure on citizens who don't realize the enormity of what we're facing as a society. I really want more arrests if people are not going to adhere. And the second thing is, obviously, people can go out to get groceries, to go and buy, get from chemists or pharmacies, and as well get medical care. That's the only reason you need to be out of your home. And we've found long queues at some of our shopping centers. So we need to actually have a look at mitigating measures there, because people also aren't adhering to the 1.5 meter spacing. So yes, we've still got some work to do. Day one of the lockdown, I'm not too unhappy, although I would have liked to have seen it across the board, everybody staying at home. But I think generally fairly good in the region, but obviously those hotspot areas, we've got to make sure we up our game, and there'll be more military coming into the region over the next 2 days, and making sure that that we're dealing with this. And my plea always is to all of society is it's all of our responsibility to mitigate the risk. We've got our first two deaths. The risk is that we move to thousands of deaths, and that's why we're doing what we're doing, and we need everyone to take co-responsibility in dealing with this.
Social media is amazing at times like this. You can pick up all kinds of information, including a video that's doing the rounds, which I've had confirmed is legitimate, in Alexandria, where there's a KFC store with a lengthy queue. Is that also allowed in the Western Cape, where fast food outlets can remain open?
So as far as I'm concerned, the answer is no. They cannot remain open. You can only go to buy groceries. Although I know that there has been an appeal to relook at the regulations around food outlets, but not to be open to the public. In other words, a restaurant or a fast food outlet like a KFC could still prepare food, and then there would be a delivery system. But that is still illegal at the moment. There is an application to say, surely this makes good sense. If you're trying to keep people behind closed doors, especially vulnerable people, it's even, try and keep them behind closed doors from just going shopping. So surely if we could deliver a meal to them, it would be better. We have got that application in with the regulators at the moment. But definitely at the moment, it is illegal.
When the president announced, he said that homeless people would be looked after. Have you got any particular or special plans in that regard?
Okay, so we have a number specifically, and the biggest problem sits in the city of Cape. We have a number of shelters, and I think as of yesterday, all of the shelters were full bar 192 beds, I think it was. And still trying to put, but we've got a couple of thousand homeless people. And so the teams are out today creating temporary shelters and having a look at how, of course, it's you can't create congregations of temporary shelters. You've got to create spaces that people can also have social distancing. We also still have 300 foreign nationals in a church in the middle of the city. And we've been in the last 2 days in negotiation with national government and ourselves and the city for a piece of land so that we can sort of repatriate these people to a space where they can stay for at least 21 days before they either integrate into society or get repatriated or to their country of origin.
Well, as if you haven't got enough problems, we know that there is a very serious tick problem in the Western Cape with drug-related issues. These people presumably are even more vulnerable than most.
Correct. So, drugs, gangs, crime. I must say that, and it's still very, very early days, but speaking to Minister Albert Fritz, the MEC of Community Safety, since we've had the lockdown where liquor outlets have been closing early, and much more sort of evidence of police on the streets, And we actually have started to see a little bit of a reduction, but I don't want to get too excited too early. And of course, drug addiction and alcohol addiction is a big problem. And so social development has got a big role to play, but also not only with our gangs and our drugs, also with the people who are needing food from feeding schemes. You know, once you close your schools and your ECDs, there are many children who don't get a meal anymore. So social development is still busy setting up feeding schemes and mechanisms so at least we can find a meal a day for some of our youngsters. And of course, these become very difficult during lockdown conditions.
We know in the UK they've called for volunteers and they've had an overwhelming response to support the national health system there. 600,000 people have already signed up there.
Yes.
Have you anything similar in the Western Cape?
Okay, so we haven't moved to real big open calls, although we have had a number of medical people who have retired, we've asked to come back, people who have got medical backgrounds, and the department has been working in a number of areas. Not that we need them today. We have sufficient medical care and medical space, but it's in the preparatory environment. But I suppose exactly the same thing is happening in the UK. I saw their conference centre, the big conference centre at XL, is busy turning into a 4,000-bed hospital plus two morgues. So that's quite phenomenal. What we're doing is we're trying to create a similar kind of operation, military-style tents, close to our hospitals with sort of 100 beds with oxygen. So it's almost a pre-ICU care space because we need to make sure we've got sufficient beds. We've done the modeling, which shows us that it'll build up April, May, June. And our modeling says June will be our peak. But hopefully we arrest some of that growth now with the lockdown, and then our modeling should readjust. And then it'll tell us, and we've got trigger points of when we should be converting. I mean, already some of the hotel space in our region is converted into lockdown or quarantine or isolation quarters. Of course, the next stage would be to build these style field hospitals around the province to cater for the numbers as it grows further.
Are your modelings based on the 30% a day rate that we've been seeing in South Africa?
So we've got a 10%, 20%, and 30%, not a day growth, but total infection rate. I must say that last night, I was on a Silicon Cape a Zoom discussion panel for an hour, and I shared a platform with the CEO of one of our private hospitals, and I was listening to their modeling and our modeling. There's a little bit here and there that we differ, but generally our modeling's fairly similar. I agreed with them today that we would again get our teams together to just have a look and share that information, because you need to be working on some kind of model, and then we will be measuring ourselves against that model, whether we're doing better or not, and then also taking into account what has happened in other countries and what they've done to mitigate risk. And if we overlay all of those, it should help us to make those decisions. And also, I think really exciting for me is that the agreement between private and public healthcare is something we put together during the World Cup for real emergencies. We would move to what we call gold standard management of healthcare. And that means that there's no difference between a private bed and a public bed when it comes to this crisis. A bed is a bed, and an ICU bed is an ICU bed, and it would go to the next patient. And we've already got that agreement in place, which really makes it a lot easier in that modeling to have sufficient beds. But still, even that means we still have to build tents and we still have to create extra spaces.
But it sounds to me like you've been doing this planning for a little while now.
I started this now probably 3 weeks ago. We started with our preparedness. 2 weeks ago, we went into 24-hour Joint Operation Command status. We had 5 work streams to start. We then moved to 7, and we're now on 10 work streams. A work stream would be health or the economy or social development or education. And each of those work streams have now been working for nearly 3 weeks, but 2 weeks intensively on and working what they're doing against the modeling that we've put in place. So that we, for example, in education, should the schools not be able to open, we're already working on the on the e-learning space and actually education going, but from the economy, at what stage do we trigger what kind of relief, and what are the alternatives? How do we create new economic environments to fill some of the gaps, repurposing? I think that goes to the point earlier about businesses. One of the economic ideas was repurpose our restaurants. So our restaurants have to be closed, but can we not repurpose them to still produce food, package it, and then get it delivered in some way? So the economics team doing that kind of thing, our transport team out in the taxi ranks, in the buses, making sure the cleansing systems have been working, and right down to delaying initially 3 months and could even go for 6 months, any license expiry of a vehicle license, and all the licensing processes for taxis and buses and things. So, yeah, lots of work.
How are you keeping yourself safe?
Well, I've actually been operating remotely now. I've lost count of days, but I think I've been operating remotely since Wednesday. So it would have been, I'm sitting at 9 days now operating remotely. I have broken that once or twice. I have chaired one cabinet meeting, not remotely, but today's cabinet meeting was chaired remotely. We've been doing our cabinet meetings remotely for a week already. We meet every single day, the cabinet does, at 12:30. All the teams come together in an almost military style, run by Minister David Mania. They come together and report back every day at 10. So we've got quite a strong structure going, and we've put those processes in place right down to the last ask, is that every single lead coordinator, work stream lead, and the top management of this government have to have not just one person to take over from them if they become sick, too. So, lots of work.
Are you communicating with the other provincial premiers?
I haven't for a while. I've been a bit snowed in here, but we definitely have had lots of national, provincial, and local government communication. I mean, if I think about the refugees, I think Minister Motsoaledi and I mean, the number of calls we had yesterday between each other was quite scary. So definitely lots of work there. Our officials, specifically around the regulations, changes in the regulations, our officials have been doing lots of work together. There is one thing, and I mean, personally phoning the president, him calling me, so definitely lots of real work, saying, you know, opposition politics and politics, no time for that. We've got a country to save, and we've got people's lives to save. So I'm really happy with the relationship that we've got at the moment, and there's lots of work still to do, but and lots of risk, but I'm pretty happy.